Board will come to order. Good morning, and welcome to the 1,332nd meeting of the Board of Directors. Our first bit of business since our last meeting, our new Board Secretary, who we previously appointed, has actually been on the job since the end of last month, but this is the first meeting and the first opportunity to perform the necessary ritual of imposing upon her the oath of her office. And so I would like to first ask that Ms. Cicada Castilla come to the center here, and also I know she has some family members who are here, and ask if they would like to come forward and stand with her. And I'll meet you right over there. First order of business, as always, is comment from the public. Madam Secretary, do we have speakers this morning?
Yes, we have one.
Please call the speaker.
Would Mr. Bill Orleans please come forward?
Good morning.
Good morning. Meetings every 3 months, I think, is insufficient. I hadn't expected to speak today until this morning. I had expected to speak at our next meeting. I like to think of this as us. Lamada is mine. At our next meeting, I had intended to speak. I'm waiting to get some information so that I could be accurate in any suggestion or allegation that I might have made. But I'm going to forego that for another 3 months because of what the ire aroused in me this morning in reading the paper. Nothing that I have to say or about to say reflects on any personalities. Both the general manager, Mr. Cato, and Director Amaname, I find capable good guys, even though they've never evinced much support for any suggestions that I may have made to them. They're good folks. And our system, while not the best for our nation, is a good system. Simultaneously, while being good, it also stinks. But that's separate from the story in this morning's paper. I'm strongly urging a reconsideration of this move. I don't know if it's unprecedented within WMATA or much elsewhere, where a board member takes a staff position. And if it were to be necessary, I don't know that this new position should be created in the first place. We have a general manager. We have, and he has, a deputy general manager, many other senior support management, senior management. We have assistant general managers. I don't know that this new position is necessary, but if it is necessary, it would seem to me that the board should undertake a search for it and not take from one of itself appointed from among itself someone to fill this position. That was my first thought, and I'm still a little bit angry about it. But on second thought, I might think the general manager could find a similar spot, $200,000 a year, for each of the other members of the board. And maybe at some point, WMATA could get a new board wholly uninfluenced by past relationships tied to the system or the personalities within the system. And at some point, we might, well, I think it's vanity to aspire to be the best writer in the nation. At some point, we might approach being a better writer than we are now, and we're good right now.
Your time has now expired.
I strongly urge the board and the general manager to reconsider this new appointment. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rawlings. Is that the only speaker for this morning?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Let me just say, for the record, the board is not involved in hiring decisions for members of staff at WMATA. We make a few appointments. Those are to the, essentially, the top people, the general manager being the most significant of those, the general counsel, the inspector general, and the board secretary being the others. So the manager has a broad charge to run the organization and perform his job and to meet goals that the board sets. And the board holds the general manager responsible for that. Beyond that, the intention is to give the general manager as much freedom to organize this agency as he sees fit and as he finds effective, and to hire those people that he finds to be the most effective in doing so. We don't get involved in that, and we certainly had no involvement whatsoever in any of the hiring decisions recently announced. As far as someone who had been a member of the board moving to such a position, that is, of course, not unprecedented. Just a few years ago, the board, in fact, itself appointed someone to be the general manager who had been serving on the board. That was perhaps a more difficult situation since it involved a board choice. This, I interpret as a matter of the general manager finding someone who's talented, who is looking for an opportunity and taking advantage of the opportunity to get such a person. And I see no reason to question it any more than I question any of the other appointments that he's made of people who are clearly qualified for the jobs that they've been hired to do. That's all I have to say on the matter. The agenda has been previously distributed. You will see before you today there are blue sheets for those items that have been amended. That includes the agenda, for which there were a few minor changes since the distribution. And within the docket in front of you, there are blue pages for those items which have been changed since you last saw them. The agenda as presented, again, you can see in blue. Are there any changes? If not, I will ask that the agenda as so presented be adopted by the board. Hearing no objection, the agenda is accepted. We have before us the minutes of the meeting of June the 26th. Are there any amendments or questions or corrections to the minutes of the June 26th meeting? Hearing none, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes as presented.
I move that they be approved as presented, which includes the modifications shown on the document.
On the blue sheet before us. Motion made by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Mr. Giancola, I believe it was. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. The minutes are accepted. The next item would be the report by the Writers Advisory Council. Is Ms. Iacomini here? Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Zimmerman, members of the board. It is my pleasure once again to present you with the Writers Advisory Council's report. I would just take a few minutes to highlight some points that I've made to you in my monthly written report, which was a little late, so I've edited some of the blue pages. Since we last met, Metro has experienced 6 of the top 10 record-setting weekday ridership, with another 2 were realized in June. And that's really pretty amazing. And many RAC members have commented to me that they feel this is not just an anomaly, but a trend that is going to continue. Increased ridership does mean an increased need for Metro staff to continue their good efforts to improve customer communications in the system, because these record ridership days aren't being set by those of us who've been using the system for 20 years. These are new riders who aren't quite sure about the ways of the rail, and so I think we continue to need to help them out. Dave Kubicek, Metro's Assistant General Manager for Rail Operations and Delivery, attended RAC's July meeting and presented an overview of some preliminary plans for the next generation of rail cars. We very much appreciated the opportunity to see this design. It was very reassuring to know that a lot of the comments that some current and also former RAC members had made back in late 2006 about the interiors have been taken into account. We talked about the durability and strength of new seating design that we saw pictured. We want to make sure there's sufficient signage concerning priority seating He also mentioned the need to make every effort to provide grab bars and handholds in areas not right in front of doors for standing riders, because we are getting a lot of standers. Additionally, staff's proposal to reduce the number of operator cabs per train and instead use that area for passengers was well received. I suspect there are many rail cars that have never been a lead car, and so that's probably wasted space, and we could make use of it for people. We also have asked our folks to reflect as they ride the older cars and send comments, and we're hoping to get those put together in a formal way and sent to Mr. Kubicek sometime in August. It also occurred to me, seeing the shiny new bus outside, that what we're seeing in that interior is something we may be talking about for the new rail cars. And so if folks think of it in a little wider format, that would be a good experience and a good test in all of our minds about what things might look like in the future. And that includes the hard flooring. I think I've taken to heart some of the comments I've seen printed in Dr. Gridlock's column about not wanting the cars to look too institutional and to keep with the philosophy that the founders of Metro had. And I think that is achievable. I'm not quite sure we're there yet in some of the preliminaries, but we're getting there. One of the things we did ask about was when the grab bars were going to be installed on all trains, the nice little pull-down things. Speaking for the lobby of people 5 feet 2 inches and under, which I am, I'm looking for that to happen in a lot of the cars, maybe sooner rather than later. We also had a presentation about Metro's proposed CIP for 2010 to 2015. You all know this, I'm preaching to the choir. What we heard from riders at the fare increase hearings were all about things that really are in the CIP. They are not necessarily operating costs. More rail cars, better signage, improved and more reliable elevators, escalators, all of the things riders ask us for are in that budget. It is, of course, everyone's hope the federal government is going to step up to the plate and help us with the CIP. But if they don't, clearly the role of Metro's jurisdictional partners is going to be even more critical. RAC looks forward to working with the board as it tries to reconcile Metro's needs with the region's available resources. Also, at this month's rail subcommittee meeting, staff from Metro's Office of Strategic Communications previewed a new format for the pit signs. These changes would allow Metro to provide additional information to customers in the event of an emergency or service disruption. Some things like more specific information about the nature of the disruption, an estimated time when it might be cleared, information on alternative transportation, what bus route could you take, maybe instead of just taking the train. RAC members provided feedback on the new messages and really appreciated staff coming to see us. Probably the best thing about what was proposed is it costs $0. We use the infrastructure we have in place. We just get people to think of new ways to write down the information and present it and make it better for our riders. Anything that doesn't cost money and improves communication is top with me. We are also pleased that WMATA is continuing to conduct the robust public outreach sessions as part of its bus priority quarter development plan, with last week's meeting on the 16th Street line was the latest example. It was great to see the addition of a crawl alerts on WMATA's webpage concerning bus route disruptions. It's a great additional resource for riders. Of course, RAC does encourage Metro to continue its efforts to reinstate an accurate next bus service as well. And lastly, on behalf of myself and my fellow RAC members, we're pleased that the board will be appointing some new members to fill some vacancies on our council. We look forward to working with them and welcome the various perspectives I know they will bring to the table. Finally, we will not, as the board will not, be meeting in August, and so I look forward to returning to you all in September. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Iacomini. Are there any questions involving the report to the Riders' Council?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Jewell.
Yes, I would. I don't know how you go about it, but I'd certainly applaud RAC in terms of their advocacy and the realization that as the system is expanding and growing in terms of use, utilization by the customer base, that the needs really are in the capital improvements program and not so much operating support for federal funding and all of the above. But there's a major piece to the puzzle that's still unresolved, and that's an outside of the Potomac and Virginia. Maybe you can find some way to support us in our advocacy with our legislators down in Richmond to really show them how important this system is, not only to Virginia, but to the entire region, and we need, you know, their support. I know from the elected official standpoint in the business community, we've pushed all the buttons we've done and are constantly doing everything we can, but maybe they need to hear from folks like your group.
I have participated and testified at a recent Virginia hearing. Was it last week, Mr. Sandoval? About the need, although in Virginia right now we're falling on deaf ears, I'm afraid, but one is always hopeful in the next election cycle that things have changed. You are correct, the people who are on RAC are very much activist minded, and I think we'll take your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Yakimi. I will note the item about the ridership and, you know, really extraordinary levels we've had in the last 2 months. I think we may need a new statistic because I noticed as we bump days from previous, I mean, I would like to know how many times we've set the number 3 day or the number 5 day in history in the last 2 months. So that when you look at it in retrospect, you get what Ms. Giacomini just reported, that there were 2 top 10 days in June. Actually, there are 2 top 10 days still on the list from June. But in June, there were like 10 top 10 days or 8 top 10 days or whatever it was. I forget. But it was something more than 2. And I saw in the internal publication we have a list of the top 25, I guess, in the most recent edition of that. And I think we're up to something like 21 of the top 25 days have occurred in the last 3 months. So we may need to look at some different ways to express what's going on because we're just, you know, breaking records within the same week that, you know, have been set on a previous day. Presumably things will slow somewhat in August.
We're not so sure of that. From what we see, the ridership continues to increase, so we're prepared for even higher ridership in August.
Well, that is something we will continue to talk about, clearly. The next item is the chairman's report. And I guess I've made my remarks now, and so I will move to the one item of business I have, which was mentioned in Ms. Giacomini's report, which is that we do have some vacancies to fill. There is a resolution before you under item 7B that will appoint, and I won't read the whole resolution, but it will appoint members for all 3 jurisdictions, including Kenneth DeGraff and Carol Carter Walker of the District of Columbia, Mary Kay Dranzo and Christopher Farrell from the state of Maryland, and Evelyn Tomaszewski from the Commonwealth of Virginia. So I will move the approval of this resolution.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Benjamin. There's no discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Congratulations to those newly appointed. And that will bring us to item 8, the report of the general manager, Mr. Cato.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is my report for July. You are aware that we're meeting in August. We scheduled for the time. The report of July served you very well. Again, we set a new record for independent state ridership on Metro Rail, occurring nearly 600,000.
Additionally, in July, we had 10 days that broke into our top 10 highest Metro Rail ridership days, including our highest ridership day of all time, when we carried 854,638 riders on Friday, July the 11th. I also like to mention this month that early this month, we began to post bus service disruption on our website. And I'm sure that many of you saw the news coverage of our newly arrived compressed natural gas articulated bus that's out front of the building. This bus has a new paint scheme, a new design, and will begin services next month. And those of you who are interested, again, the bus is out front for you to take a tour of that vehicle.
Mr. Cato, on that subject, I did have my first chance to actually see that bus this morning. Remind me how many of those we've purchased?
We purchased 22 of the compressed natural gas articulated vehicles, and we have another additional 142 hybrid vehicles coming in later this year.
And we are going to be using, I assume they're operating out of Bladensburg?
Yes, they will be.
And so do we know which lines they're going to be on?
We're still working on that. There's some issues on some of the routes, with road conditions, are they the best vehicles to put there? But we are going to definitely operate it for a period of time on the services to Dulles Airport. Given the increase in ridership on that route, I think visibility so the public can see the new design of our vehicles and get some experience on operating long trips, there will be two vehicles on that route.
Let me ask you, apart from the, you know, the design of the vehicle itself, which is quite nice, the paint scheme on it is something new as well. And I noticed that it says above the window level, local.
Yes.
And does this reflect the, you know, the way in which service is going to be categorized in the future and the scheme that we've talked about trying to rationalize?
Yes. And in fact, the Metro Extra, which is the blue with the silver, will be the vehicle paint scheme used for express services or any services if we do rapid transit. The red and silver bus with the blue and white stripe are the vehicles that we will use for local services. So this is a transition for the organization. All new vehicles will be in the new paint schemes, and as we paint vehicles in the normal rehab cycle, they will be painted with the new colors.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, you can continue with your report.
Thank you.
Sorry, the question on that point? Ms. Hutchins?
I have to admit I did not get a chance to sit in the bus, but I did see it as I came in. But I do have a question, and it was raised to me from someone from the disability community, E&D, and that was, have we had an opportunity to ensure that those folks have, prior to our decisions, examine these, and as we all did, and as the RAC did, since many of some of the people are taking advantage of fixed bus and rail services, and I think that's a very important piece that we get their input in our choices. And I don't know if we have from E&D.
I agree that we should, and hopefully we did have their input. I know the vehicle was here, and I see our staff is shaking their head in the affirmative. When we had the test vehicles here, that the members of the committee did get an opportunity to board those vehicles to give us their comments and feedback on what we should have in this vehicle that we ordered.
Okay.
To move on, this past Monday, riders on the Orange Line experienced delays during the evening rush hours. And this was a result of power problems experienced by Dominion Power that affected Metro as well as others in the region. This affected the West Falls Church Station, the Dunn-Loring Station, and Vienna Metro stations. But I'd like to list the actions that we took. We first fed power to the West Falls Church Metro Rail stations from the West Falls Church Rail Yard in order to keep that station in operations. We terminated every other train at the West Falls Church to keep the amount of power that we were draining low so we could continue to provide services through to Vienna. We ran shuttle services between Dunn-Loring, Vienna, and West Falls Church in response to the elevator and escalators that were not working at the Dunn-Loring station. We deployed 10 additional personnel to the West Falls Church to assist customers. This was in addition to the supervisors regularly working at that station. We also allowed for extra time at West Falls Church to facilitate the boarding of customers heading to Vienna. We had bottled water available for our customers to help combat the heat that was there. We also made 148 public announcements during the time. Of these, 116 were system-wide, and 32 were to specific stations. We also sent out 24 separate email alerts to customers and provided customer constant updates to the media as well as our website. We had a rail supervisor deployed to the Boston station, and we had 6 buses on standby in case of the need for a bus bridge. We also initiated a strong line of communications with Dominion Power to coordinate repairs. And by Tuesday morning, all the power was restored, in order to allow us to operate regular services. And I would like to thank my staff for the hard work to minimize the effect of this disruption, and we took many steps as outlined above. Since this time, we have received some feedback on additional steps that the public would like us to incorporate should this type of disruption happens again, and we intend to include those in our communications in the future. Again, last Friday, we announced that we had 6 arrests and a counterfeit fare card ring. I want to commend again the Treasury Department, the Information Technology Department, the Automatic Fare Collection Department, and the Metro Transit Police for the work they did leading to the arrest and to the quick response that minimized financial damage to Metro. We have taken 5 steps and are still in the process of implementing some of these to reduce Metro's exposure to counterfeiting. We reduced the amount of monies customers may trade in for a new paper fare card from $40 to $7. We've also posted signs at all of the our stations and all of the vending machines notifying customers of that change. We are freezing Smart Trip cards that investigators believe are linked to the scheme. We are encouraging customers to only buy Metro fare cards from authorized Metro vendors, not someone on the street who say they're part of a government program that will give you a discount card. And we're working with local governments to ask them to pass laws that would make selling fare cards from unauthorized Metro vendors illegal. The last action that we would take, and we're currently working on this, we're exploring better technologies for detecting the counterfeit cards. Our investigation continues, but as of today, no further arrests have been made. Mr. Chairman, that finished my report, but the Deputy General Manager, Gerald Francis, would like to again talk about some employees who have done extraordinary work over the past month. And Mr. Francis will introduce those employees to us, and he asks that you and I come to the
Sure. Before you begin that, let me just make sure there are no questions of the General Manager at this time. If not, then we'll proceed. Thank you.
If I can have Mr. Stanley Campbell come join us in the center here, Mr. Campbell. Station Manager Campbell is in the spotlight due to a commendation received by a customer. The customer travels late in the evening and catches a bus home from Landover Metro Rail Station, where Station Manager Campbell works. One night, as the customer was waiting for a bus, a man approached her asking for money. Station Manager Campbell saw what was happening and intervened. Since then, on several occasions, when there aren't many people waiting at the bus stop, Station Manager Campbell waits with the customer for the bus. In her words, that is a very special, it's very special and unselfish of him. And Stanley Campbell is one great super worker. So, Mr. Campbell, we'd like to acknowledge you as a super worker. Our next spotlight, employee spotlight, is Edward Towton. Mr. Towton, the Acting Assistant Manager in the Office of Chief Engineer for Vehicles and Rail Operations Delivery. Ed recently organized and participated in a test of the redesign of the 5000 series rail car door controller. This test required the controllers be tested in an enclosed, controlled environment where temperatures were elevated to 120 degrees Fahrenheit. The door controllers were tested in this high heat environment and required to operate for 24 straight hours on a cycle holding the doors open for 30 seconds and closing the doors for 1 second. Thanks to Ed and his team from many different shops, Metro now has added confidence that these new controllers won't have the same type of heat-related problems that originally designed had. Ed, I want to thank you and your team. It must have been awful hot in that 120 degrees, so we can. Operator Lisa Abel. On June 28th, bus operator Abel was operating the A6 to Southern Avenue Station when a horrifying assault took place on her bus. At one stop, the bus suddenly lost power and a group of assailants boarded the bus, attacking a group of youth in the rear of the bus. Due to the power loss, operator Abel was unable to open the rear door of the bus and a fight broke out in the back. Then five shots rang out and the assailants left the bus. Operator Abel went quickly to the back of the bus and discovered a young man on the floor of the bus who'd been shot in the lower back. Relying on her training, on the training operator Abel summoned aid and waited with the young man for the police and ambulance. Through all the chaos, operator Abel remained calm and handled the situation in a professional manner. Just help, join me in acknowledging operator Abel for her quick and alert work.
Thanks to, again, to all three acknowledged today and all the many other employees here at WMATA who every day do their job in extraordinary ways to bring the best possible service to the people of this region. Mr. Cato, did you have anything further?
No, sir, I did not.
Thank you. We'll move on then to the report of the Finance Administration and Oversight Committee. Mr. Benjamin.
We have three items on the agenda today. The first two relate to the new federal charter bus regulations and the impacts that they have on Washington Metro. The first of those is the bus bay policy, and it deals with allowing other operators to use our facilities. I would note that the package that you have is in blue. It is substantially different from the one that you had before. And it changes the delegation that goes to the general manager in committee. We had a package that came to us that we substantially changed. That was not reflected in the package that went out. That what the committee acted on is in blue here. And what it does is allow the general manager between now and November to establish a fee schedule and insurance requirements for private carriers who access bus facilities at Metro Rail stations. It does retain for our operators, the same, our being jurisdictional operators and public operators, the same provisions as were there previously. They do have priority access. I think those are the major changes, and that is the major set of items that are in here. I move approval of the policy regarding the use of Metro bus facilities at Metro Rail stations.
Motion by Mr. Benjamin.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Monahan. Discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries. Next item.
Second item also has to do with the charter regulations that the federal government has put out there. In particular, it requests that we approve a public hearing to change the rates that we have for charter. You'll notice this is again in blue. A number of changes were made in there, some of which relate to the timing of the minimum, and I think there may still be one more issue as I look at it, and I guess I'll have to ask staff about that. One of the changes that occurs is in the first whereas, it talks about our current rate of $83, and what changed was the minimum was originally stated as being 3 hours. It's now stated as being 4.5 hours. In the proposed rates to go to hearing, we do retain the $83 for local jurisdictions. And I would just note that the numbers in the board action information summary appear to be incorrect given the resolution. It talks about a 3 hour minimum, not a 4.5. In the approval, it says staff proposes to establish the existing charter service of $83 per hour with a 3 hour minimum for local jurisdictions and schools located within those jurisdictions. Everywhere else, you've changed this to 4.5. At this point, you did not. Is that your intention at this point? In other words, it was 373.50 was your minimum before. At this point, you've dropped it to 249. Is that deliberate?
I'm looking around. I believe that's an error. We intend to leave it the way it was before. That was the direction from the board, that whatever we charged the jurisdictions in the past would remain the same.
I'm not quite sure what we should be approving then. What did we do? Did we do a three-hour minimum or a 4.5, which is where we were before?
Well, there are two different things, if I may. The first, whereas, establishes what the current charter rate is. And there is no current charter rate specifically for jurisdictions established in the tariff. So, and that's a slight clarification from our last discussion.
Let me just...
So the board is being asked to actually establish the current charter, a charter rate for jurisdictions, and that would be $83 an hour. And it does say a three-hour minimum. And then the proposed increase is to, for everyone else, is for $159 an hour with a 4.5-hour minimum.
I understand that, Ms. O'Keefe. I guess the question I have is, originally when presented to the committee, and if you look at the board action information sheet, it was $83 and a three-hour, it said three-hour minimum, but the number was a 4.5-hour minimum. That was corrected in the first whereas to 4.5-hour minimum. And not clear to me whether you intended to do a three-hour minimum or a 4.5-hour minimum in number one under that whereas.
I'm gonna have to defer.
That's where I'm hung up, because if we said keep it the way it was, were you charging only a three-hour minimum, which is what you said, but you gave a number for a 4.5-hour minimum, or were you charging a 4.5-hour minimum?
Well, I'm hoping someone from our...
Ms. Wilson. We've been involved on the government relations side and coordinating with BUS in this endeavor. And the objective was, the difference between the 3 and 4.5 was to continue to kind of be more permissive and to be deferential to our existing jurisdictional partners. And so they would be not only entitled to the rate, but also to lower the minimum number of hours.
So it should be 3?
So you're saying you do want 3, regardless of the fact that before it used to be a higher dollar number. Okay.
So let me just see if I understand then. So the...
I would make no changes to the resolution, Mr. Chairman.
You think the resolution has the right numbers?
Correct.
Because the only one that matters is the first resolved clause?
Well, the statement in the first, the whereas staff proposes 1 and 2... does set 83 and 3 hours at 249. It is different from what was indicated on the board action information summary and different from what we were told in committee. But if that's the intent, that's fine with me.
It seems consistent with what we wanted to do.
I think so.
But my question was, since resolved is what matters usually in these things, that first resolve clause is the one that addresses it, I think.
Right.
Can't see anything else that would adversely affect that.
If that is the case, what we are doing in this case, in the last one, we were establishing or allowing the general manager to establish rates directly because those are license fees, the last action. In this action, we are asking for a public hearing on charter service fees that we would be charging. And I move that we request the staff to hold a public hearing.
Motion and a second to hold public hearing, and that is, I'm sorry, how does that affect this resolution?
This resolution calls for
a hearing. Are you not moving the resolution?
No, it does call for a hearing. That's the last whereas.
Right, but you're actually moving the resolution then, are you not?
I'm moving the resolution as written.
So, all right, so the motion is on the resolution as presented to us in blue here in front of us.
Correct.
Okay, which happens to include the hearing requirement. Discussion on the motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
On the next item, which is Columbia Pike Superstops, this is an item that is fully reimbursable by Arlington County, who will take over these super stops after they have been constructed and implemented. The item is a $2 million item at no cost to any other jurisdiction. I move that item.
And I will second it. Let me say that this is something we're very excited about. We hope that it's going to obviously improve the quality of service for people on the particular route on Columbia Pike. But we're also hoping that it will provide a good example of how we may be able to do things, and other people will benefit from what we learn in doing it. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Thank you. Does that conclude your report, Mr. Minchin?
Yes, it does.
And we'll move to the report of the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee. Ms. Hudgens.
Mr. Chairman, the Planning and Development Committee met this morning, and there were a series of action items. And I'm looking for my blue sheet because that's what's here. Okay. The first item that approved was one that staff sought to obtain committee concurrence and board approval to negotiate and execute a lease agreement with Prince George's Center One Incorporated for approximately 40,000 square feet of office space at 6505 Bellcrest Road in Hyattsville, Maryland, in support of the Metro Access and Customer Service. The action was approved by the board, and I think there were outstanding questions that were to return to the board regarding, I'm sorry, I don't have them here, but I think there were two outstanding items that were asked regarding the square footage. I'm looking for staff. The parking, yes, thank you. The parking information. And I think we want to include that as part of the information that will come back to the board. This board also approved, the committee also approved staff, I'm sorry, let me move approval
okay.
of that item.
Second.
Okay. Okay, so this motion by Ms. Hudgens, seconded by Mr. Solomon for the, this is for the lease.
Right.
Of Prince George Center One. And for the discussion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
Okay, thank you.
Next item.
Staff, the committee approved a policy on LEED certification for WMATA regarding new and substantially rehabilitated metro facilities to be designed and built with the goal of achieving LEED Silver rating, and to encourage initiatives that will reduce the carbon footprint, especially on metro facilities, encouraging developers to meet the same requirement in joint development projects. Mr. Chairman, I would move approval.
And I'll second it. Ms. Hudgens moves the approval of the resolution. Again, this is in the blue sheet, which reflects the changes made, particularly the last resolve clause, or next to last resolve clause, in
right.
committee. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
The committee also received a presentation regarding the system infrastructure rehabilitation program for the Red Line from DuPont Circle to Silver Spring. And the contract for this approval coming to the board is to only initiate a contract to provide that system improvements. And the best value awarded on the contract would provide all aspects of station and line rehabilitation. This is a new approach that we will begin in rehabilitation of our system. This will be the first contract in a series of contracts for other segments of the metro system. Staff has been directed to return to the Planning and Development Committee with details as well on the scheduling impact, the service improvements, and more details on the scope of the contract, including DBE information. And Mr. Chairman, I would move approval of the resolution.
Second.
Motion by Ms. Hudgens, seconded by Mr. Solomon. I do have a question on this.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Cato, mm-hmm. The presentation we saw, most of the slides on top of them said new approach. And I was wondering if you can give me one sentence that explains what is new about the approach.
What's new about the approach is that we're having one contractor to work on a segment of the line, every element of it, not just multiple contractors doing different pieces of it, and that it is the new approach is we're doing it through the different interlocks instead of stations. We're not doing station by station. We're doing it by the, in the way that we can operate services through the work that's being done by single tracking in the off-peak hours, not midday, but off-peak in the evenings and on weekends.
Okay, that was a long sentence, but it was a sentence. I'll let it count. Now give me a sentence that tells me if I'm a writer and I don't know this engineering and contract stuff and don't want to, why does this matter to me?
Because you have more reliable service. I want to make, since the last one was so long, I want to make this one short.
And it's reliable in the sense that, I mean, in other words, compared to the way you would otherwise have done it or we've done it before.
The way it was done before, the service was done in different segments of the lines by different contractors.
And I care about that as a writer because?
I can predict what time and the wait time, the headways on the trains on the weekends, and I would have less disruption.
Okay, so there'll be less disruption, and I'm going to know better. I can plan better around where it'll be,
yes.
When it'll be.
Yes.
Okay. So that's good. Nonetheless, I still hear the word disruption, which means that while you're doing this, you're going to be disrupting me at some points.
Well, we're going to minimize the disruptions to certain hours of the evening, so you're not disrupted midday or on weekends during the day.
Of course, I prefer zero disruption whatsoever. When we're drivers, you know, we run, oh, there's road work there, you know, you don't want to be anywhere near this road work. It's terrible when there's road work, right? Should we stop all the road work? I mean, we tend not to think that way, but I think if you ask drivers, should the state stop all the road work? Most people would very quickly figure, well, no, you don't want to do that. It'd be worse, you know. But it's easy to forget that when you're just confronted with the road work that's tying you up at the moment. And similarly on the rail system, you know, the disruption when you experience it's a nuisance. I wish you weren't doing it. On the other hand, if I think about it, what happens if you didn't do this work? And maybe we should just for a moment remember, what happens if we didn't do all this stuff here?
You can absolutely be assured you would not get the service because the system would break down.
So this is really necessary to keep up a high level of service which will minimize disruptions in the future.
Absolutely.
I think it's just good for us to remind ourselves of that from time to time. Any discussion on further discussion on the motion? Mr. Gincola.
Yeah, I would place the whole station rehab their contract.
My concern.
Very good. Any further? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, we have two items out of executive session for approval. One was the approval of the term sheet for the Lady Yard Chiller for the selection of Donatelli and Klein as the
developer of the Navy Yard Station and authorized the staff to approve the term sheet and negotiate the development agreement. In addition, staff has been directed to ensure that the development, joint development agreement include a requirement for the consistency with MMATA's LEED certification policy and an affordable housing contribution consistent with the District of Columbia's law. And I move approval on the item.
Second. Motion by Mrs. Hudgens, seconded by Mr. Monome. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
And the last item is the amendment to the Morgan Boulevard agreement, and the committee moved approval for a 90-day extension of the master development agreement negotiation period for Morgan Boulevard, and authorized staff to continue negotiations with Garrett Boulevard, with the joint venture Garrett Morgan Boulevard as the selected developer. And I move approval on that one.
Second.
Motion by Mrs. Hudgens, seconded by Mr. Solomon. Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
Abstain? Yes, I would like to be recorded as abstaining, please.
That motion carries with Mr. Benjamin abstain. That concludes your report, Mrs. Hudgens.
That's it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That will bring us to administrative items, which we have actually five. We'll do them individually today. Madam Secretary, please help me out. Announce the first one.
Item number one is approval of the FY09 Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Program goal.
Very good. Mr. Cato, any report on this item? If you just want to summarize briefly, that would be fine. What's the goal?
This is, again, to establish the annual goal for FY 2009 required by the Federal Transit Administration. In the past, we've always reached the goal and sort of exceeded that goal.
And we're setting a goal of 25% for, 25% for FY 09.
All right, thank you. Discussion, Mr. Benjamin.
When last we saw this item, I believe the board sent it out for public comment, and I don't believe we've heard anything about what happened in that public comment. Was there any comment? And if so, what was it?
No, we have received any comment.
Okay. So there was no public comment in the period during which it was available for public comment?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Yes, I move approval.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Benjamin, second by Mr. Solomon. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion carries. Item two, Madam Secretary.
Metro Access Fleet Replacement Vehicles and Equipment.
And currently, 75 Metro vehicles Metro Access vehicles have exceeded the recommended life cycle, and up to 25 more will be in this category during FY 2009. And we're asking that the board approve to award a contract with the Commonwealth of Virginia to replace those 100 vehicles and also associated equipment that's necessary to maintain them. The monies are funded in the urgent capital needs Metro Access fleet vehicles that was approved by the board recently in the 2009 budget.
Any questions? Mr. Giancola, followed by Mr. Yule.
Yeah, a question. How many total vehicles do we have in this fleet right now?
We have 453.
And is your intent, General Manager, to replace, 100 every year, or what's the cycle of your...
Tony, can you share the microphone?
Oh.
What's the cycle of replacement?
We're bringing that cycle forward in September with the capital improvement plan, but we have the funds to be able to replace these vehicles this year, and so we're moving forward with this 100, but the actual cycle going forward we will present in September.
And what is the average age now, and what's your goal of the fleet? Turn on your...
The goal is a four-year lifespan. So by retiring these vehicles, some of these go back all the way to 2002.
And what's the life now on the vehicle? What's your average life?
Well, the average fleet age right now is approximately 3 years, because the majority of the fleet was purchased at the beginning of the new paratransit contract in 2006, but these vehicles have been operated since the previous paratransit contract, so the time has come to replace those.
All right, so your average life is more than 4 years right now, and you want to go to 4 years, or you want to go to 3 years?
We want to go to 4 years.
All right. That's all.
Yeah, what kind of vehicles are these going to be? Are they hybrid, gas efficient?
These are gasoline lift-equipped vans like the ones that have been purchased over the last couple of years. Same configuration.
Is there a motion?
I move.
Ms. Hutchinson moves approval. Seconded by Mr. Giancola. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Next item.
Administrative action item number three is approval to initiate an AWARA contract to provide fire suppression maintenance.
Mr. Cato?
Yes. Currently, the preventative maintenance portion, we do provide preventative maintenance through contract on 1,148 buses and their fire suppression system. This contract will be for 1 year with a 4 1-year options to continue that maintenance on our system. To ensure that it reduces the possibility of any fires in relationship to the current natural gas buses, as well as other vehicles that are alternative provisions that have been the possibility of applying.
Questions to the general manager? I'll move approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Ms. Hudgens seconds. For the discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Next item.
Next item is actually administrative action item number 5, approval to indemnify Experian Consumer Direct.
Mr. Cato, can you explain this?
Yes, I'm going to ask Carol O'Keefe.
Ms. O'Keefe.
Mrs. O'Keefe to explain this.
This is a indemnification request associated with a contract that was let to provide credit protection services to WMATA employees, and that was in connection with a release of personal information. There are a number of provisions, protections that are offered to these employees, but specifically Experian asked WMATA to, in effect, be responsible for all actions that WMATA either has or will undertake in connection with this information release.
Question, Mr. Benjamin.
This is another one of those ones that says no impact on funding, and I always get nervous. We've had several of those when it says that. And in particular, we're being asked to indemnify Experian against claims arising from a situation that would be similar to one that just recently occurred. So I guess I have three questions. Number one, what is the size of the contract that we just entered into with Experian? How many dollars is that?
Mr. Benjamin, at the request of Experian, the specific details of the contract are being held confidential. They consider it proprietary. However, I can say that the dollar value is under $100,000.
Okay. And given the liability that we are now indemnifying them for, do we have even the vaguest idea as to how big that number could be? Should there be a breach similar to the one that they are asking to be indemnified for, and which has occurred already?
They're asking us to indemnify them for any claims that might arise out of the breach that has occurred, or any
future one
liabilities that might be associated with that breach, which occurred, if you will, under the WMATA watch.
Is this just that one, or is it all potential
this
future
ones?
This
particular one.
Okay. And so we don't have any idea what the potential cost could be to us.
Director Benjamin, I think that cost is very minimal, if any at all. We have determined through our review and investigation with the Inspector General's office that only a few firms downloaded that information. Those firms we've been in contact with, and they're legitimate firms, and one firm that did download it deleted the files, and I'm going to ask the IG if they need any more details, which to me minimizes any exposure on the part of Metro.
But we're still investigating this. We have a list of the names of the entities that downloaded it before it was taken off, and in the process of talking to one of them, they had not unzipped the information and they destroyed the information. But this is still ongoing investigation.
So what, if I may summarize what you're saying, is that although we are doing this indemnification, the risk to the authority, in your opinion, is absolutely minimal. Is that right?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
I might also add, Mr. Benjamin, that part of the contract is $25,000 in identity theft protection for the employees. So to that extent, our liability is mitigated by the contract itself.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I guess I would move approval.
Mr. Benjamin's approval. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second. Discussion, Mrs. Hudgens.
I know that this item is regarding the steps taken to protect the authority from an action that's already occurred. I would like to know what steps have been taken to ensure from its process that it can't occur again. And specifically, since the Social Security issue is such a critical piece in terms of the vulnerability of citizens, what procedures are in place to ensure the ability to access that is protected in a way that we can prevent this from occurring.
I'll take a stab at addressing that. As I mentioned, we have an ongoing investigation. When we complete this investigation, we do plan to identify some lessons learned that will help minimize things like this from occurring in the future.
I assume then that includes the full breadth of the IT organization and working with that to ensure that it can't happen again.
I suspect that some of the answer to that question may be appropriate for discussion in another place.
Okay. We're still doing the investigation, trying to figure out how it occurred, what could have been done differently.
Okay. And I expect that we'll come back to the answers to your very legitimate question. Let's see, we have a motion. Is there any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Final administrative item.
Last item is the approval of international travel for a technical staff person.
Mr. Cato.
Yes, I'm going to ask Phil Wallace, who's our director of bus maintenance, to respond to this.
Just a quick summary.
Yeah, this is to authorize one of our maintenance staff to support the district DOT DC circulator project for the procurement of 14 additional buses.
You need to send a technical person to the plant where they're
made. Technical person will travel to Belgium in support of the plant inspection.
And the costs for this are being borne?
They'll be borne by district DOT. It incurs two travel, one in August, one in December.
Thank you. I'll move approval. Is there a second? Mr. Monomath, discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. I believe that concludes administrative items. Are there any reports? DC? No report. Mr. Benjamin, Maryland?
I would like to report that we did have our hotly contested election for the chairman of WSDC, and Mr. Linton is now the chairman of WSDC.
You'll give him our condolences. Anything further? Ms. Hudgens, Virginia.
I just want to acknowledge the fact that one you held as part of the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority public hearing after the unfortunate General Assembly session, and that Metro was present and participated, and I think that was very important.
Thank you. With that, we are now going to move to closed session. We have several items. We will be returning afterwards to complete any action necessary after certifying the session. I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss audit matters, contractual issues with respect to tax advantage leases and the Smart Trip program, labor negotiations, safety and security matters with respect to fare collections, consistent with board procedure Roman numerals 6.C, D, E, and F. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Benjamin. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. We're in closed session. Thank you.